From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. This will likely be the last Naps Chat prior to our holiday break, so the table will be turned on me for this episode. I'm handing the moderator's microphone to the publisher of the National Association of Postal Supervisors monthly magazine, Karen Young. She is the Chief Executive Officer of Ballant Young Publishing. I have known Karen for about 23 years, and she has edited me for just that long. Welcome to Naps Chat, and I yield the chair to Karen Young.
Well, thanks, Bob. This is it's always good to have the table turned on you. Sure, Naps members would be interested in learning how you got started in working in the political realm and how you ended up with your emphasis on the Postal Service.
Well, Karen, my dad was a career postal employee. Specifically, he was a clerk who worked in four different postal facilities in New York City during his 30-year career with the United States, first at the United States Postal Department and then the United States Postal Service. Many NAPS members know this, but for those who don't, his first supervisor was Ruby Handelman, who went on to become president of NAPS. You know, I came to Washington in 1983 and was tasked by a newly elected congressman, it was Gary Ackerman, to handle his education and labor portfolio in the House of Representatives. He was assigned to the now extinct House Post Office and Civil Service Committee, and during his second term in Congress, he was promoted to a subcommittee chair on that committee. He tasked me at that point to become the legislative director of the of his subcommittee on the Post Office and Civil Service. So from there, I just went on to develop an expertise in postal issues and postal legislation. I left, as you know, Karen, I left Capitol Hill in 94, served as a legislative assistant to the president of one of the postal unions, and for almost two decades represented postmasters. And now for the past 4 years, I represent for legislation all EAS-level employees, including supervisors, managers, and postmasters.
Well, along that vein, now that the midterm elections are over and the Republicans have a very slim majority in the House, how is that going to affect the NAPS and Postal Service legislation that will be coming up?
Well, the immediate impact is that the chairman of the committees all change from Democrats to Republicans. But compounding that, on the House Oversight and Reform Committee, you have the current chairwoman, Carolyn Maloney, leaving Congress after being defeated in a Democratic primary, and she is being replaced by James Comer from Kentucky. Now, we haven't had a deep dive with the chairman, Chairman Comer, about what his plans are of the committee, but there's some talk about changing the name of the committee to reflect more emphasis on its oversight responsibilities and government accountability. I think the narrow Republican majority in the next House of Representatives mean that we're going to be dealing for the first 4 months of 2023. The issues that we'll be dealing with are not necessarily the same issues that we've been dealing with in the immediate past Congresses. I think there'll be more focus on budget issues because historically, when Republicans controlled the House, they focused on cutting the federal bureaucracy and the benefits that are earned by federal and postal employees. I'm not certain that Chairman Comer has a specific piece of postal legislation that he wants to promote in the short term. And I do think with Republican control of the House of Representatives specifically, they're inclined to provide the Postmaster General with a bit more latitude to manage the Postal Service, that is, without legislative interference, than the Democrats had for the past number of years. It is likely that the House committee or subcommittee may give a higher profile to oversight and investigation, interestingly enough, of the Postal Inspection Service. And I know that our Branch 51 President, Butch Maynard, has been extremely active in regard to the Postal Inspection Service and how it's hampered the ability of the Postal Police Force to do its job. And if the immediate past is any indication, the Republicans on the committee asked for attention to be drawn to the Postal Inspection Service's surveillance program, they believe targeted activities of conservative groups. So they are interested in the Postal Inspection Service. Also, I think Congresswoman Elise Stefanik's stolen campaign checks totaling $20,000 in the Postal Service as of today, I think, has not responded to her inquiries, will garner some attention, and she may be communicating with Comer her concern about the Postal Service not responding to that. And lastly, the Gabarino-Pascrell Initiative and with Eleanor Holmes Norton, their legislation on restoring postal police authority to enforce the law, postal law, to protect postal personnel and property, and to investigate postal crime, may have increased attention in this Congress. What's important to note, and the president of the Postal Police Union brought this to my attention, is that the Inspection Service has sort of reprioritized the issues that it is dealing with and the crimes for which it is attentive to crimes such as fentanyl through the mail and mailability of certain objects. And that is sort of monopolizing its time, leaving protection of postal personnel and the mail vulnerable. And we're seeing this by the tremendous escalation of postal crimes being committed across the country. In fact, we had a unfortunate death due to a robbery of a postal carrier out in Wisconsin recently. And unfortunately, that's becoming more prevalent, these crimes.
What is the outlook for the Democrats with their one-seat majority in the Senate?
I think there'll probably be less impact on the Senate since it already has a majority, though it be a 50-50 majority with Vice President Kamala Harris breaking the tie if there's a tie vote on the floor of the Senate. However, the one seat, the 51-49 majority, will make it easier for Democrats to push confirmations, nominations, presidential nominations to such boards as the Postal Board of Governors and the Postal Regulatory Commission through a little bit easier because it's not going to be a 50-50 tie on the committees. I think what's more important than the 51-49 majority are the folks who are replacing retiring members of the United States Senate. For example, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky is succeeding Senator Rob Portman as the ranking member of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. There is a notable difference between outgoing Senator Portman and Senator Rand Paul. Whereas Portman was among the more moderate Republican members of the Senate, I'd say Senator Paul is one amongst the most exotic members of the United States Senate, to be kind to him. He has a particular preoccupation with attacking outgoing NIH official Dr. Anthony Fauci. Also, whereas Portman was a leading advocate of the postal reform legislation, Paul opposed it. And, you know, also, you got to look at the different senators who filled open seats. For example, in Ohio, I just mentioned Portman is leaving. He's being replaced by J.D. Vance, a new exotic member of the Senate. Ted Budd is replacing Senator Richard Burr, and Richard Burr from North Carolina, and Burr was able to work across party lines on issues on the Intelligence Committee and legislative activity. And in Missouri, Eric Schmidt is replacing Roy Blunt, who had a very, very deep desire to help the Postal Service, primarily because Hallmark Cards is located in Missouri, but also because he's one of the amongst the moderate members of the Republican Party. You have in Oklahoma, Mark Wayne Mullins is replacing James Inhofe, and in Alabama, Katie Britt is replacing Richard Shelby. The last two senators probably not as much or as a earth-shattering change as the others. But I think it's more than the difference in the majority, whether it's an even-up majority or one or a two-seat majority. It's the personalities, I think, that is going to make the biggest change in the Senate.
Still staying with the Senate, Senator Sinema from Arizona surprised everyone this month when she announced she was leaving the Democratic Party and now identifies as an independent. What effect, if any, will that move have on postal legislation?
I don't think it will. And I'll tell you the reason why. We've had a history of independents, people switching parties to become independents, or independents being elected to the Senate. Senator Angus of Maine is an independent. He's been very pro-postal. Former chairman of the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, Joe Lieberman, switched from being a Democrat to being an independent. And Bernie Sanders from Vermont is an independent. The designation of independent does not confer on the senator whether or not they're pro or anti-postal or positions on our particular issue. I will note, however, that with regard to Sinema, that the legislative chair for the state of Arizona, Jeff Salmon, who also for the convention chaired the Postmasters Committee, is very close with Senator Sinema. And she's particularly interested in issues of regarding postal employee safety, particularly in vehicles, and having them weatherized so they have air conditioning, particularly in the Arizona summers. And also, what's important to understand about the state of Arizona, its high reliance on absentee ballots. So Senator Sinema will be very attentive to any attempt to undermine absentee balloting or mail-in ballots. So I think that Senator Sinema becoming an independent really won't have an impact, A, on the majority, because she did indicate that she's going to continue to caucus with the Democrats, and secondly, that she has a pro-postal agenda.
Talking about the voting by mail in the midterm elections that just concluded, which went very smoothly, voting by mail seemingly continues to be a very popular option. With Republican control of the House, what are the prospects for the H.R. 1307, the Vote by Mail Tracking Act?
Before we get to that, I just want to say that I think as the Republicans do a post-mortem on the general election, they realize how pivotal absentee mail-in voting is and the delegitimization of absentee voting and mail voting by the former president and by certain members of the Republican Party, and their encouragement of their members not to participate in mail voting may have had an impact in certain close races and may, in fact, have had an impact in the state of Georgia, where Senator Warnock prevailed. With regard to specifically H.R. 1307, the Vote by Mail Tracking Act, which would help the Postal Service track mail, would help state election authorities track election mail, I think that, you know, that passed the House Oversight and Reform Committee with the support of Representative Comer and with an overwhelming 34-5 vote. So if it doesn't find its way into an omnibus end-of-year appropriations bill, my suspicion is Comer will revisit the issue next Congress.
And also, still sticking with the legislation aspect, NAPS has long been a supporter of repealing the WEP and GPO. Support among legislators seems to have grown. But with a huge price tag of repealing these programs, do you think we'll ever see a change?
At this point, with the change in Congress and the Republicans, particularly in the House, becoming more attuned to budget issues, $182 billion over 10-year price tag is not something that really will endear the legislation to the new majority. The last markup on the, by the Ways and Means Committee, on H.R. 82, the elimination of the GPO WEP legislation, the repeal legislation, indicated a consensus that they're trying to find a way, a compromise way, to address some of the issues affect GPO and WEP. After all, nationwide, 205,000 federal, state, and local retirees are affected by the government pension offset, and almost 2 million federal, state, local employees affected by the windfall elimination provision. That's a lot of people, And I think that Congress really has to address that. I mean, this has been going on since the late 1970s, early 1980s. I mean, when I first came to the Hill, this was an issue. We're still dealing with the issue. We've been working collaboratively with the National Association of Retired Federal Employees on this issue. We are looking for a way to address the issue. We will continue to do so, and it will continue to be one of our priorities next year.
What are some of the other priorities that will be that NAPS is going to focus on in 2023?
I think foremost will be providing a fair and equitable means of consulting over pay and benefits for all EAS-level employees. The unanimous decision by the U.S. Court of Appeals over here in the District of Columbia and the Postal Service not appealing that decision is instructive about the merits of providing an equitable and fair solution to the inability of the Postal Service to comply with the law as the Court of Appeals decided and as the mediators who were involved in the consultative process, in the past consultative process, as they decided. We're about to embark in a new consultative process, and the juxtaposition or the dovetailing of waiting for the U.S. District Court to decide on the damages that were inflicted by the Postal Service in its violation of the law, I think will play into that, but that's more from our legal experts, Bruce Moyer, our general counsel, and others, to litigate and to consult over. But from my perspective, the legislation to ensure that we don't have to go to court every time the Postal Service violates the law is tremendously important. It's expensive, it's time-consuming, and it's adversarial, and we don't want it to be that way. I think, secondly, treating all EAS-level employees consistently with regard to Merit System Protection Board appeal rights is also extremely important. Our complication this year is that we'll have to find a new Republican champion for this legislation because Dave McKinley from West Virginia was defeated in the Republican primary. So we will look for a new Republican champion to join with Representative Jerry Connolly of Virginia in reintroducing that legislation. I would just say we're going to go back to Congressman Connolly to reintroduce the consultative rights legislation. I think postal police legislation also would be prominent. That is restoring the postal police's authority or clarifying the postal police never relinquished that authority to investigate crimes, to protect postal personnel and property off premises, postal premises, is extremely important. I think the confirmation of presidential nominees to the Board of Governors and the Postal Regulatory Commission is important. After all, Board of Governors Lee Moak and William Zolars, their term expired. They're now in holdover years. I mean, their term expired on December 8th of this year. So now they're in a holdover year. So we encourage the president to nominate expeditiously replacements for these two individuals or to do what what President Biden needs to do. Also, there are two nominees to the Postal Regulatory Commission. Robert Taub was renominated by President Biden, but Mark Atkin was not up until this point. So we look for prompt nominations and confirmation for the Postal Regulatory Commission. Another issue that we are probably going to take up is, and it relates to postal support employees, PSEs. There are EAS-level employees who served as PSEs early in their career. What's unfortunate about their tenure as PSEs is that as non-career employees, they did not attain any creditable service towards FERS. So we're looking for ways, and there is legislation that had been introduced by Derek Kilmer of Washington to enable them to buy back the service and have it applied to their tenure as postal employees so they can get accounts to its requirement. And lastly, I would look for and encourage aggressive and comprehensive congressional oversight over the sorting and delivery center consolidation initiative. Congress needs to become involved in why the Postal Service has not provided any cost estimate or cost savings, if there are savings involved in this initiative. What is its effect on postal employees? Is it a benefit to them or is it harmful to them? How does it affect delivery speed? And also importantly, How does it impact post offices, the retail outlets? Is this just another excuse to close post offices? I mean, we saw this in Post Plan, and we saw the attempt earlier about the retail optimization initiative. All these initiatives, though in L'Enfant Plaza, they believe this improves efficiency. How does it affect folks out in the field? And I think that is what Congress needs to get involved in. And the question is still out there is, why isn't the Postal Service following the law in engaging stakeholders, communities, in impacted community? After all, one of the few provisions that was good in the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act, which was enacted many years ago, was that it required the Postal Service, when it was undergoing any of these types of consolidations, to put in place a public comment period and a public engagement with impacted communities. And I think that's important.
Speaking about NAP's efforts, a new SPAC raffle is going to start on February 1. Can you tell us why SPAC is so important to NAP's legislative efforts?
The bottom line, and this is the bottom line, SPAC is the most effective way to hold our elected leaders accountable, because we could support or oppose their reelection through SPAC. Voting for NAP's interests is fundamental, but also financially supporting or punishing folks who do not support NAP's position is also key. Now you're saying, well, we're going to vote. You know, we'll vote in our friends, we'll vote out our enemies. But not everyone lives in Representative Comer's Paducah, Kentucky-based congressional district, or lives in the state of Michigan, which is represented by Senator Gary Peters, or for that matter, any other member of the relevant committees that are so crucial to us. So the only way that a NAPS member from the state of Utah could affect the decision-making and the access to Chairman Comer from Kentucky, or to a Senator Peters, or to a Senator Paul, or whomever, is through SPAC contributions. Also, it gives NAPS members back home in their state the opportunity to have informal FaceTime with their elected leaders. We send NAPS members to local events so they can have this informal FaceTime at a political event. I like telling the story of a postmaster who I once sent to an event for a Republican senator. He held a prominent position on our Senate committee. And the event, as I said, was back home in the state. Previously, there was no relationship whatsoever between this postmaster and this United States senator. However, the postmaster made such an impression on the senator and his wife at this event that they became lifelong friends, and EAS positions became prominent on the senator's legislative agenda, and his staff was advised to always make time for a meeting with us. So this is how SPAC influences our friends.
Can you give us any hints as to what's in store for this year's legislative training seminar in March?
I think for those who've attended previous legislative training seminars, they're not going to be surprised. There's not going to be any new revelation. We're going to educate attendees and delegates to the LTS about the new Congress. I mean, there are a lot of new members of Congress, many of whom have never dealt with postal issues before. We're going to familiarize delegates with our legislative agenda and do deep dives into the issues. There will be motivating congressional speakers, and we've just begun sending out invitations to individuals who we think will be informative and helpful to our members. And there'll be role-playing exercises, and there will be our SPAC dinner where we recognize SPAC contributors who've reached the vice president elite category and the president's ultimate category. But I think it's good. But most importantly, it's going to be an opportunity for NAPS members to network with each other. After all, in what other place other than a national convention, and this is not a convention year, do you have the opportunity to network with over 500 of your colleagues from around the country? This is a tremendous networking opportunity.
So looking back on your career and all the things that you've enjoyed and experienced, can you tell us what do you like best about your job and what do you find most frustrating?
I think my interaction with postal employees, NAPS members, folks who will be NAPS members, and guiding them through the legislative and political process and seeing them excel in communicating with their members of Congress and seeing the pictures that they send back when they interact with their members of Congress is the most gratifying, because I know that makes an impression. I know they are educating members of Congress and members of the Senate and those who want to attain to those positions to be responsive to our needs. So I think that's the most gratifying thing that I'm involved in. The most frustrating, Congress and the White House, their periodic inattentiveness to our concerns because there were distractions and there were other issues that are more important. I think the delays that we've had in nominations to Postal Board of Governors and the Postal Regulatory Commission is also extremely frustrating. I mean, President Obama left vacant Postal Board of Governors slots, enabling folks to fill the positions who may not have been the most qualified to be on the Board of Governors during President Trump's tenure. So now we are waiting for two Board of Governors nominees. We're waiting for two PRC, Postal Regulatory Commission nominees. As I think frustration, because at times the White House doesn't prioritize postal issues. Though I got to say that the prominence that President Biden has given to the Postal Service, both with regard to mail voting and to the Postal Reform Act, gives me some hope.
And finally, over the past few years, politics and our political system have been very frustrating and at times terrifying at some of the events that have happened. The political divide has never been so extreme. Getting postal reform legislation was such a positive, and it took bipartisan support. But despite that, it's hard to feel optimistic going forward. What can you tell us to help us help inspire us not to give up the effort?
If you give up the effort, you are doomed to failure. I suggest this book to anyone who's interested in politics, Master of the Senate. It's about Lyndon Johnson, and one of his pet projects was passage of the Civil Rights Act. It took around 15 to 20 years to pass that legislation and to get it fully done. If he, at any point in time, if anyone gave up on the Civil Rights Act, it wouldn't have happened. Postal reform, it took years to get through, but it happened. So you can't give up, because it's sort of like entering the lottery. You can't win if you don't play, and we got to be at the table.
Thank you very much, Bob.
With that being my last word this week, I want to thank NAPS Chat listeners for logging on, and also I want to thank Karen Young for moderating this session of NAPS Chat. Thanks, Karen.
You're welcome.
If you enjoy NAPS Chat, please leave us a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store, and more importantly, share NAPS Chat with your friends and colleagues. On behalf of the offices and staff of NAPS, permit me to wish each and every one of you a joyous and meaningful holiday season. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came.